Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, January 28th, 2018. This is episode 1458. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Texture. Access the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere, using your smartphone or tablet. Go to texture.com/twit to start your free trial today. And by Carbonite, from customer data to disaster recovery and backup, automatically protect everything in the cloud with Carbonite. To learn more, visit carbonite.com. And by TurboTax Live, new from TurboTax. Now you can get a personal review of your tax return with a CPA or enrolled agent right on your screen. Talk live with a tax expert as often as you need for tax advice to help you file with confidence. Go to TurboTaxLive.com/TechGuy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Yes, it's that time once again. A geek with his own radio show. Your worst nightmares come true. We talk about computers, yeah. The internet, home theater, digital photography. Photography, smartphones, smart watches, augmented reality, voice assistants, you know, Amazon's Echo and Siri and Google and all that. At this very hour each week, you can join the conversation by calling me, 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number, toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. It's an 888-827-5536. But you can also, because it's a toll-free number in the U.S. and Canada, you can reach it with Skype or some other, internet telephony program from anywhere in the world, and it shouldn't cost you anything. A lot of people call us via Skype out. 8888-ASK-LEO. There is a website associated with the show. Of course there is. What kind of tech guy would I be if I didn't have a website? Which is, by the way, that is, nowadays, everything changes so fast on the web that your website looks out of date. It's worse than Paris fashions. The website is techguylabs.com. And yes, feeling a little old. How old is it? It's a couple of years old now. Oh, time for a redesign. And these redesigns, they're not cheap. Not hundreds of thousands of dollars. So you'll forgive me if it looks a little dated. I'm going to leave it that way. It works. Great search there. We put the audio and video from the show there after the show's over. We, of course, have textual written questions and answers, and all the links are there, too. So it's just kind of it's a reference, the bibliography for the show, techguylabs.com. And it's free. There's no sign up. I'm not flogging it because I want your money. We don't charge you anything for it. I just want you to know where to find it so you don't have to feel like you have to write things down as we go through this crazy world. New phrase I just learned. I love this. This was a hack attack that happened a lot overseas and hasn't really happened much in the U.S. yet. But according to Brian Krebs, his great blog, KrebsOnSecurity.com, the U.S. Secret Service has begun quietly warning. They don't want to make a big deal about it. So Leo's going to make a big deal about it now. Sorry. Quietly warning financial institutions across the country that ATM machines are being targeted. And this is the thing that caught my eye. The attacks, which make the ATM machines spew money, the hacks are called jackpotting. I love that. Jackpot! Jackpot! Remember, these ATM machines, they're just computers like any other. In fact, they're kind of usually old and out of date, running version of Windows for ATMs. It's basically Windows XP. It's that old. Banks have that attitude, and actually in some ways they're right. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. And sometimes an older version of Windows is safer because it's been patched and all the holes discovered, except maybe there's still some holes. If the bad guys can get physical access to the ATM machine, they can put malware or specialized hardware or both into the machine, infect it, and jackpot. I would like to just see that. And they have been a big problem in Europe and Asia. I have been reading about it for some time, but apparently starting to happen in the U.S. NCR, which makes a lot of these machines, sent a warning to its customers 3 days ago saying that we're starting to hear about this happening in the U.S. While at present, these appear focused on non-NCR ATMs. It's an industry-wide issue. Everybody's at great pains to say, it doesn't affect us, but just in case. It's like Intel and AMD. AMD did that with the Intel flaw, Spectre and Meltdown. It doesn't affect us, but just in case. And now it turns out it does. Jackpotting. So if you're walking by an ATM and it's just spitting out bills, what do they, you know, what do? Do they stand there with a bag? I can just, I feel like it's gonna, his guy's going to look like the Hamburglar. He's going to have a little mask on and a hat and striped shirt. He's going to be standing there with a bag and the ATM's going to go and he's going to catch all the money coming out of it. So they do the hack. They use an endoscope, which I actually own. Now I understand why these are being sold right and left on Amazon and eBay. An endoscope is a little USB camera you could stick down your throat. It's got light on it, and it's flexible. It's on a long, flexible wire. Traditionally, you know, physicians would use it and actually stick it down your throat, but you can also get inside the ATM machine. And they're looking, and they attach it to their phone, so if you see somebody with a wire and he's going inside the ATM machine, he's looking for somewhere where they can attach a cord so they can hook up their laptop to the ATM machine and put some malware on it. Once they do that, the ATM says, "I'm out of service." We see that all the time, right? And then, according to Brian Krebs, the crook installing the malware will contact co-conspirators who can now, because of the software on the ATM, which is connected to the internet, force the machines to spit out cash. 40 bills every 23 seconds. The only way to stop it is to press cancel on the keypad. Otherwise, the machine keeps going till there's nothing left. Jackpot! There's a company, according to the New York Times, hitting the jackpot on Twitter. Did you see this? Devumi, D-E-V-U-M-I. It has millions of fake Twitter accounts, as many as 3.5 million, according to the New York Times. Some of them based on stolen social identities, pictures and backgrounds and biographies that are real, but the account is a bot, a faked account, which they then sell to celebrities. And others, 200,000 plus customers. Should I name names? Apparently, it's very widespread. Because, you know, in Hollywood, your contract, the money you make on a movie, is often tied to the number of Twitter followers. It's a really big deal. You want millions of Twitter followers. So movie stars, politicians, football players. John Leguizamo has Devumi followers. So do Michael Dell, the computer billionaire. This is according to the New York Times. Ray Lewis, football commentator, former Ravens linebacker. Kathy Ireland, swimsuit model. Hundreds of thousands of fake followers. The host of American Ninja Warrior. Even a member of the Twitter board has some Devumis. Do you have any Devumis? Yeah, they're cheap. They're a penny each. The New York Times bought some just to see. It went to Devumi. Devumi denies all this, of course. No. Those are, I don't know. But they do sell followers. I mean, where do they come from? This is what happens when your follower count becomes an important measure of your success. I want to say loud and clear right now, I have purchased no followers on Twitter or anywhere else. I don't even want followers. So there. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We are going to go to the phones. Give me a ring. Let's talk high tech. Anything on your mind? 8888. Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, your calls next. Although, you know, I should mention this too. Somebody keeps making fake Facebook accounts for me. Thank you It ain't me. It's got my picture and my profile and all my information, but it ain't me. And then they spam you. First they ask, hey, you want to be my friend? Oh, Leo wants to be my friend, but it ain't Leo. Look for the blue check on Twitter and Facebook. It's your only assurance of reliability and accuracy. Dr. Mom sent me a note this morning. She said, they're doing it again. And I'll tell you what it's some spammer, not even a recently English speaking spammer. Can I show you? Here's what it says. So they're using the picture from my blog, although interestingly the background is an older one, not the newer one. So I don't know if that's because they created it recently. So somebody pretending to be me will send you a message on Facebook saying, be my friend. Now, Dr. Mom's already my friend. I don't know why. Anyway, she responded, and then this is what the request was. Hello, am also one of the beneficiary. Hope you have also been contacted by Agent Lizzie Patrick. Huh? You have been contacted? Huh? And then they give you more. They give you spam links and stuff. So, if you see that, that's not me. I am facebook.com/LeoGLaporte. And I don't actually approach people to follow me, usually, unless I know them. If I meet somebody and say, oh, we should be friends. Oh, yeah, much better. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Kids today, I swear. 8888, ask Leo. A club isn't the best place to meet people, so I go to the bar. Is that your solution
is that
there, Kim
Shaw?
Yeah, no.
No.
No. Bar's no better. Let me just say this. Oh, there, don't look at me like that.
There's booze at both. It's the same
thing. It's the same. You don't want beer goggles when you're searching for a mate. Kim Schaffer is our phone answering person. And she's doing it right now.
I'm trying to keep the beer goggles off today.
Keep the beer goggles off. Keep your spectacles on, answering the phones, getting us some wonderful contributors. Really, I emphasize this. When you call the show, you're not just, somebody to ask a question. You're a contributor. You're a participant. You're making the show. I'm just the stuffing.
Otherwise, it would be a Leo soliloquy.
That you do not want.
Leo monologue.
You do not want that. There's plenty of that. So who should I start with here?
Tim in Fontana. Friend wants to start a YouTube channel and needs your help on how to get that started.
Indeed, indeed. Thank you so much, Kim Schaffer. Hello, Tim in Fontana. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, so listen, I've got a friend who cookie decorator, maker extraordinaire, and she's right now just kind of advertising on Instagram and Facebook and whatnot. And so she has friends that are monetizing this.
Uh-oh. The internet was getting bad, and then it just went out. But I don't know if you're still there or not. You dropped out, but I can help you because I gather from what Kim said that she, and this is actually brilliant of her, wants to make a YouTube channel. So if we all know that one of the main values of social networks from a point of view of a business is getting the word out, right? The best kind of advertising for anything is word of mouth. A customer telling another potential customer that you're great, that your cookies are the best or your plumbing is the best or whatever it is you do is the best. That is word of mouth. Everybody knows this. Word of mouth is the best. And so that's in a way what a social network kind of ends up feeling like. If you can get your customers to tweet, put up on Facebook, or even if you tweet or put it up on Facebook, you act like not a business. And this is really important. No point in tweeting if you're a business tweeting. But the president knows this, right? He tweets not as the president, but as a person. And it's much more effective because it's authentic. A lot of people say, I don't have time. I ain't nobody got time to tweet. And so they have, they hire companies to do it or they hire an employee to do it. And that is not as effective. Your tweets need to reflect your personality and your same thing with your Facebook posts. And if what you're doing is visual, cooking is a really good example. YouTube is huge for cooks. You know, all of those TV shows, you know, the Great British Bake Off and all of that, these things really started on YouTube, believe it or not. You know, cooking, I mean, I think we have to credit Julia Child on PBS with creating cooking shows, right? Many, many moons ago. But YouTube has become the place for all kinds of cooks. And you got to treat this as not an ad, although it is. Just keep that in the back of your mind. It really is, isn't it? But more, but it has to be valuable. It has to be something somebody would want to watch. So it has to be visually interesting, entertaining, informative. The more, in fact, of those things you can combine, the better. Don't forget entertainment. I have a good friend who always preached the best thing to do if you want to make a video go viral, and he's an expert at this, is to have multiple emotions, happiness and sadness. It's true in a movie, too, right? A good movie isn't just all sad, all happy, all exciting. You go to an action film and it's just all action nonstop. It's tiring. You got to have slow moments, fast moments. You got to mix it up. Same thing's true of YouTube, although this you have to do in a short form. That's another lesson. People don't have much attention span on YouTube. A few minutes. A good place to go is to look at the BuzzFeed food videos. These were created by a guy who was a pioneer of internet, long before YouTube, of internet videos, named Zay Frank. And he actually came up with a way to do food videos that have now become kind of the default. So if you look at the BuzzFeed food or cooking videos, that might well be your model. They're shot from the top down. They're sped up, right? Ain't nobody got time to watch, you know, cookies bake. They often, if you'll watch them, seem to have, you know, kind of a very simple, like, here's how you make cookies for the Super Bowl. This would be a good one to do this week, right? And you do it fast. Within 3 minutes, somebody should know all the steps. You can watch it. BuzzFeed does it best, and everybody's copied them ever since. Even the Food Network, which you'd think would own this, but no, the Food Network is doing the same thing. Top down, sped up. They show the steps. You put text, very important, because you're going to put it on Facebook and Twitter as well as YouTube, and those autoplay videos may not have audio, so you have to have text explaining. Splashy text. Basically copy. It's okay. Copy what they do. But make it something somebody could... Now, here's the trick. I don't think most of these videos, and this is true of food cooking shows on TV, most people don't make that recipe, right? It's what we call aspirational. They watch these videos thinking, I could do that. I should do that. I never do that. Make your Super Bowl cookies. Make them cool. Make them interesting. A friend of mine, iJustine, does a lot of cooking videos on YouTube very successfully. But then you've got it on YouTube. Now what do? You got a great video. Now you get your friends, your family, and you tweeting it, putting it on Facebook, spreading it around, hoping it gets picked up. Because if it gets retweeted, and if it's clever and funny and turns people on and is informative and makes them want to make that cookie, even if they never do, you'll get retweets. Then it spreads. Don't worry too much about the brand name yet. You can put that at the beginning and the end if you want. The real trick is to get people to subscribe to your channel, because you're going to make more of these. You're going to make one a week at least. People successful on YouTube often make a video a day. I understand you've got a business, your cookie business. You can't do that. But do as many as you can. Something between once a day and once a week. No less than once a week. New content is important. You want to get subscribers to your YouTube channel, because if they subscribe, then they get a notification that says, hey, there's a new cookie video. You want to get people to put it on Pinterest. You want to get people to put it everywhere so that you can drive people to your YouTube channel to watch the videos, to subscribe to the videos, to build that up. And just remember to soft sell. The whole idea is to get people to know about it. You want them to go to your cookie store or order your cookies online. Eventually, that's what you're going to do. The good news is Mrs. Fields did this without any of these tools. Now you can do it so much easier. The bad news is there's a lot of competition for attention. But go do it. I think this is great. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Captain J, do not open it. Captain J says, I've been getting a lot of email disguised as Apple, Google, iTunes. Each one has a PDF file attached. What would happen if I opened it? So tempting, isn't it? It could be that it's not a PDF, that it's a malware, or it could be a malformed PDF that might not impact you unless you have a particular vulnerability and reader. The key is not, you know, not to open it. I get a lot of emails now from people I know. But yeah, don't click that link. The whole point of this is to get you to click that link. And that's why they use people's names that you know and so forth. And I can't promise you that it would be harmful. In fact, probably it wouldn't be. Don't do it if you're on a Windows machine. Don't do it if the PDF reader it's going to open is Adobe Reader, for instance. But if you're on a Mac and it will open in Preview, Apple's Preview program, you're probably safe. Make sure it really is a PDF, though. That's another thing you have to do, right? You have to look and make sure that it actually is a PDF, not a PDF.exe. Yeah, or open it on somebody you don't like's computer. That's right. I'd be really careful, Captain J. I can tell you right now, there's nothing in it. You're not missing anything. It's hard, isn't it? You even know it's malicious. You know it's malicious, and you want to open it. Isn't that funny? That's why this works. Yeah, be safe to open it with a hex editor or even a text, you know, editor. You might be able to glean something from it. I love it. Captain J in the chat room. I love it. I love your question, Captain J. He says, Leo, I get a lot of email that says it's from Google, Facebook, Apple, but it's not. And there's always a PDF, portable data file document attached. Should I open it? What would happen if I opened it? Should I open it? I love it. This is exactly why this stuff works. Virus, if you think about it, malware authors are social scientists. They are sending out millions of tests every day to see what works. And over the years, they've evolved a system that is quite effective for getting you to do something dumb. Even if you know it's dumb, you want to do it, don't you, Captain J? You want to open that. You know it's harmful. That's why they're pretending to be from Google and Apple and EA and all those other companies. I get a lot of them, and I confess I want to open them too, from friends. Now, I know friends don't just send me a PDF link. They don't. And clicking on, and I've said this over and over, don't open email attachments. I've been saying that for a decade. And it's still one of the most common ways people get into your system, bad guys get into your system. Don't click links in email that's suspicious. Look at the URL of the link. What does it say? If it's weird looking, don't click on it. If it says it's from your bank, easy enough. Open your browser and type it in by hand, your bank's address, and go there that way. That way you know you got the right address. It's very easy in email to fake an address, to show one thing and link to another. And those attached PDF files are almost certainly not PDFs. And I can pretty much guarantee they're an attempt to hack your system. Now, most of these emails, these, I guess you'd call them phishing emails. Sometimes they're spear phishing, meaning they're targeted at you. Especially if you're in a business and you get a lot of them to employees because they're trying to hack the business, right? First of all, the reason you want to open them is because they have honed. Didn't take much honing. Their technique to get you to want to open it. Inside could be all sorts of things. It could actually be a PDF targeting versions of the Adobe Reader or other PDF opening programs, the program that will open when you double-click it, knowing that there's flaws in those programs, and a specially crafted file can trigger it and put bad stuff on your system. It may not be a PDF. It may just look like a PDF, and if you looked a little harder or maybe got info on the file, you'd see it was, you know, completely benign.pdf.exe or .com or .pif. It's a file that is actually going to execute when you double-click it. And that's really what you got to watch out for. But even then, he says, I'm on an Android phone. Well, probably that email is targeted at a Windows machine. So if you open it on an Android phone, nothing's going to happen. But on the other hand, if it's one targeted at an Android phone, then you don't know for sure if it is or isn't, then you really might regret it. The worst part is you might not regret it immediately. You might not even know anything bad's happened. You just double-click it, nothing happens. You go, oh, okay, and you move on with your life. But meanwhile, they've buried something deep within your system that's spying on you or all kinds of things. So, yeah, of course you really want to. I want to. I look at that. I'm a wonder. I know it's a malicious. I know my friend didn't send me a link to WXJ37419.com. I know that, but I really want to click on it. Sometimes I say, well, I'm on a Mac. I'm probably, it's probably aimed at Windows. No, don't. Just don't. One of the reasons is it's cheap to send these out. It's virtually free to send these out. That's what I say. Bad guys are doing these experiments at a rate of a million a day. It's that easy and that inexpensive. So, you know, if I'm going to send out a million emails, maybe I'll make a third of them at targeting Windows, a third of them targeting Mac, and a third of them targeting Android. Who knows? You don't want to open the one that's, you know, designed for that particular platform you're on. And no matter what, you're not going to learn anything. There's nothing magic in there. There's no pony in there. It's a malicious piece of software. You know it. You know it. You know it already. And you still want to open it. Now, somebody in the chat room said, well, you could probably use a hex editor to open it. That's true. If you want to turn yourself into a virus researcher, be my guest. But just remember in the real world what people who research real viruses do. You know, they have clean rooms and they wear bunny suits and they're not even touching anything. They're using those claws that they put their hand in the sleeve and then they have a special protocol. If anything leaks out, they hit the buzzer, bam, bam, and the doors close. Treat it like that. That's what real, even, you know, computer virus researchers do. They have clean rooms. They have clean systems. They're very careful because these bad guys are very good. And they have, more importantly, years of social research to know how humans behave. Oh, are they good? Just don't open them. Don't. Nothing good can come of this. You will not learn anything. Nothing magic will happen. You're not even going to get a little tiger that says, ha ha, hacked you. No, nothing good will happen. Resist the urge. Tell you, if you have an urge to do something, hit the delete button. That's what you should do. Delete key, delete key, delete key. But isn't it amazing? I mean, this is the thing actually that really worries me most about this modern age, more than anything else. And it's good guys and bad guys doing it. It's not just bad guys. The nature of digital interactions is such that they can be monitored, they can be executed cheaply and in great quantities. The social research that's going on right now, not just from malware authors, but from Facebook and Google and Apple and everybody else, to figure out what it is that's going to get you to do what they want you to do. You know, we know this. We go in a Vegas casino. We know the music, the lights, the colors. Everything that happens in there is geared toward one thing and one thing only, to get you to put more money on the tables, more money in the slot machine, period. You don't, there's no mystery about that. They don't even hide it. Well, it's the same thing for Google and Facebook and everybody else, except they're not looking for money on the table. They're looking for what they call engagement. You might call it addiction. That might even be a more accurate term, but they want you to spend more time in their casino. More time you spend, the more money they make. And so everything that happens, just assume it's like a Vegas casino. They're not benign. They're not. Everything that happens is there for a reason. It's there to get you to spend more time. Everything. The color of the page, the layout of the page, the message in the email. It's all. And we're all engaged, unfortunately, in this vast social experiment right now. I'll give you know a good example, and it comes from a book about internet addiction. By the way, I poo-pooed the notion of internet addiction for a long time. I'm kind of now a believer. The guy talks about Warcraft. really wonderful online game, World of Warcraft, created by Blizzard. And the game is, you know, you create a character and you're in there and you're fighting. And there are other people, by the way. It's real people. And the biggest activity is you raid. You go on raids. And you all go in together as a band, a group of people. You carefully pick your partners and you go in and you beat the computer-generated villains and you get loot. You get stuff, armor, money, weapons, whatever. So they have millions of these going on all the time. They are constantly monitoring to see how long you spend in the raid, how long you spend in World of Warcraft, how much time, what loot generates more attraction, what kinds of raids give you a bigger high. This is weaponized addiction. And it's not, it's everybody doing it right now. Every app. You don't think you play Candy Crush hours a day just because it's fun, do you? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This year, I want to be my best self possible. Hey, let me... I love this. I am such a fan of this application. Texture. Can I talk about Texture? Texture is kind of... Think of it as Netflix for magazines, basically. So you can put it on your phone. You can put it on your tablet. It's really kind of the app the iPad was made for. But if you don't have an iPad, any tablet... you can, you know, I have an Amazon Fire tablet. Let me pull it out. This can be your magazine. This is an inexpensive tablet, you know, but it could be your magazine rack with Texture. And you get more than 200 magazines. They are from all the best magazines. So one of the things I love about Texture is they have editorial selection. So you can see all the titles and, you know, I mean, it goes on and on and on. There's tons of stuff from running, cycling, brides, boys' life. You know what's fun? I grew up reading Boys' Life. I'm not going to subscribe to Boys' Life. But the fact that I can read Boys' Life again, do you think they have in Boys' Life, remember they had Goofus, was it Goofus and Gallant at the back? Look at this. You get every page. This is kind of cool. A little bit of nostalgia for me. And as I mentioned, you can zoom in. So you can really, it makes it easier to read, make the text nice and big. I'm just a big fan. Texture, TEXTURE.com/twit. Try it free. And if you like it, you can subscribe to 200 plus magazines. Fast Company, Family Circle, Field and Stream, Pregnancy, Food and Wine. They have a lot of stuff for $9.99 a month, and you get everything. GQ, Good Housekeeping. They've got, of course, sections that allow you to, if I go to the highlights, find new stuff. Great discovery. So they even have stories just for me based on stuff that I've read. New and noteworthy stories. Emily Blunt wants to keep life a little mystery. They've got weekend reads, long reads for the weekend, because they know it's Sunday. From The Atlantic and The New Yorker and Reader's Digest and Maclean's, the top 10 reads, what everybody else is looking at. Some great collections, too. Grammys. Oh, Grammys are tonight. So, of course, I can read Grammy coverage in Billboard magazine, New York Times, Interview, Red Book, The Hollywood Reporter. I wanted to give it I didn't want to give it short shrift. There's some great stuff in here. Texture.com/twit. And if you decide after the free trial you like it, you're going to get a special deal, just $9.99 a month. That is such a good deal. So much less expensive than buying a magazine on the newsstand. Go to texture.com/twit to start your free trial today. Texture.com/twit. We thank them so much for their support. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. Philip in Canoga Park, California is next. Hi, Philip.
Leo, can you hear me okay?
I hear you great. Welcome.
Beautiful. Thank you very much for taking my call. I've got this really frustrating issue
with
one of my HP laptops. I actually have two of them.
Yeah.
And I thought it was just a Windows 10 thing because after one of the updates, my laptop gave me this little thing down at the bottom called Task View, and I can't have multiple things open on the screen anymore. Now, I thought it was something that happened after one of the updates to Windows 10, but I have another HP laptop that works just like it's supposed to. I can see my browser comes up with the tabs. I can click on the little, not the minimize button, but the resize of the window button, and it'll drop it down.
So everything on your screen, it's all full screen? Is that what you're saying? And
yeah.
Okay, and you can swipe back and forth.
Well, the only way to go back and forth is to go click down at this little task view icon in the bottom thing, and then it takes me back to a blank. Well, it takes me back to a screen that shows the windows that I could have open, and then I click them. So everything takes like three steps now.
So in the lower, this is Windows 10, I presume.
Yes, it is.
In the lower right hand corner, there's it looks like a little dialogue box, a little quote box. Click that.
And the notification deal?
Yeah, yeah. It'll show you a number at the bottom. It'll show you a number of buttons you can click. And if you don't see more than a row, there's a show more button. Click that. And what you will see is you're in tablet mode, dude.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. And you can click that on and off. Tablet mode is designed to do exactly what you got, which is...
hey, check that out. Did I just click that?
Thank you, Microsoft. Thank you for being so annoying. This is something they started with Windows 8. They had this kind of strange, you know, fascination, I think, with the iPad. And they thought, what is going to happen to computers? Oh, my God. Everybody's going to want to use tablets. They were wrong about this. So they squished the desktop operating system Windows into a new version of Windows tablet mode. And it was horrible. That's that big start menu with the big tile, blah, blah, blah. It was horrible. And then there were all these gestures no one knew, like, you can minimize that window by swiping down from the top. And there's all these swooshing gestures. Nobody understood it. It was confusing. In 8.1, they kind of toned it down. Finally, in 10, they've made it so that you're mostly in what you expect, desktop mode. But tablet mode lives on. Thank you, Microsoft. Mm. And somehow you got in tablet mode.
Got it. Yeah, well, I just clicked that, and everything looks normal now. I knew you would have
Isn't that weird? Oh, but this is one of the things that really is irking me about what happened starting with Windows 8. Microsoft gotten this dual mode thing. They have two browsers, Edge and Internet Explorer. They have two control panels, the fancy new big icon one and the old-fashioned one that you're used to using. They have two of everything, even, you know, like OneNote. There's a OneNote for desktop and a OneNote for tablet. They've got all their Office apps. There's two it's crazy. And it drives me nuts. Skype had two versions. Everything had two versions. And this was, I think, a mistake that Microsoft made. They're backpedaling as fast as they can, but it still lives on.
Yeah, so, well, I agree, because anything that takes us off track of what we're used to, It's automatically confusing. Well, all they seem to do is confuse me more and more.
Right. And the problem is that you did this by accident. This is that gesture thing. There's all these undiscovered gestures. Even that notifications window, I'm glad you knew that. A lot of people don't even know that's there. A lot of people don't know. Because in Windows 8, you had to actually put your mouse in the lower right-hand corner and wait a second before it would show up. Now they have a button at least. You know what? They know they made a mistake, and they're backpedaling. But you know, with Microsoft, everything takes a little while.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you're there for us, Leo, because that really helped. I knew there must be something simple, because on my other machine that didn't do this.
No. And by the way, you can go back into it if you like it. Sometimes you want an undistracted full screen mode, and that's not a bad thing. But the thing, I'm glad you called, Philip, because there are literally, I guarantee you, there are 10,000 people listening right now that are literally going, oh, they were too shy to call. Oh, that's what's going on. And they're now, you've saved them. So thank you for calling and asking. Seriously, folks, don't suffer in silence. That's what I'm here for. 8888, ask Leo. Line 3 is Sherry, Oklahoma City. Hi, Sherry. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hey.
Great to talk to you. Thanks.
Thank you for calling. What can I do for you?
Well, I learned from you back when I never thought I needed a mobile phone with small children. I just didn't want them breaking it and everything. And I've,
sure.
I still, I still, I'm embarrassed to say, but I still use my little Star Trek tricorder, which is a...
You have one of those great Motorola StarTAC phones? Those are so awesome.
Well, no, actually, mine is a little Nokia.
Oh, yeah, Nokia made them too, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, it still goes, and, you know, the kids just twist it and...
Sure.
Drop it and everything.
Sure. And the battery life is great. Probably goes 3 or 4 yeah. days in between charges. Yeah.
Not so much anymore. It's
yeah.
so old.
Yeah.
But I heard from you about 3 years ago about the Moto X, and when the second generation came along, and I was listening to you, and you described the things that I really need in my life, which are what amounts now to, you know, something very commonplace that Siri and
yeah.
Hey Google do, which is like the assistant
yeah.
type thing.
Yeah.
Keeping your brain straight and all that.
Yeah.
And being able to help you while you're driving to give you your messages or whatever. And so I thought, okay, I got to have a Moto X and I'll jump in here. And so I have this Moto X second generation and I've made maybe 3 or 4 phone calls on it. And it has
They're not phones anymore. They're really computers. Really, it's a good way to think of it. It's a computer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And well, you know, and I'm just, I just have a laptop, but I really want to use a mobile phone now, a smartphone now, and I'm so embarrassed to say that I haven't used that, and now that I learned. I just keep getting confused with the terminology, but I learned that all the marshmallows and the Kit Kats and all that stuff.
Don't worry about that stuff. Don't worry about it. You make you crazy, all that stuff. What are you looking for? What can I do to help you?
Well, I want a smartphone, and I have this perfectly good phone, but I don't know if it's safe anymore because
it's
I'm
old. Yeah, it's not being updated. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I don't think that. Without the updates that it was.
Well, here's the good news. Motorola still makes the X. They make the Z. And they make a very inexpensive one that I would recommend, the Moto G. Look at their new G phone. I think it's the G5. It's very inexpensive and great. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's very much like the phone you've got. You think you need a new phone? Is that what you're trying to do? Or?
Well,
I don't want you to waste money.
Yeah. This one's still, the battery is working. It'll turn on and everything. I've never set it up.
You never even used it?
No. I made like 3 phone calls just on the, you know, just on the cellular.
Well, maybe you shouldn't get it. I hate to see you waste money just because you think you should.
I would love to just use it, but without being able to.
It's safe. Is that your concern, is that I'm afraid to use it because it's not safe?
That's my concern.
Yes. So don't, yes, and technically it isn't, but here's the way you would get into trouble, by downloading strange applications, which you're not going to do. I know you're not going to do. You're barely going to use the applications you've got. The people who get into trouble in Android are really more adventurous.
Okay.
Don't be adventurous.
Okay.
That would be my advice to you. And this is a good chance to learn it. Now, the first thing that'll happen when you turn it on, you'll set it up. And you'll update it. Now, it's not going to have, you know, since you got that phone, Nougat has succeeded Marshmallow, and Oreo has succeeded Nougat. So you're 2 versions behind. I don't think you can get to Oreo or even Nougat with that phone. But that's okay. That's okay. You'll get all there will be a number of patches you need to download. You'll do all of that. And that'll make your phone secure enough.
Okay.
Just don't go get strange Russian wallpaper.
Okay.
Stuff like that, you know?
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. So be careful. This is true of every computer. This is increasingly my advice. The less you install, the safer you are. So only install stuff you know you want. You want Facebook, right?
I don't use Facebook. I do Twitter.
Okay. Well, then you want Twitter. Get the Twitter app.
Yeah.
That's free and that's safe.
Yeah.
Be careful. You know, you can get it. You probably want to get email. So, you can get the app for that email provider that you use.
Yes.
If you want weather, Google, you know, really the best thing to do is stick at least initially with Google apps from Google.com.
Okay. Yeah, good idea.
So if you're going to get weather, there's lots of weather apps, but Google has one. It may not be the fanciest, but it's free, and it's fine, and it's safe.
Okay. Would weather.com, which is, you know, the national weather.
Yeah, they have a good app. Yeah, they have a great app.
Okay.
So does Weather Underground. You know, that's the idea, right? Stick with the National Weather Service. Stick with known apps. Don't go with Yuri's special super-duper weather app for people who know nothing.
Oh, okay.
That would be dangerous.
And will the, as much as can be done to upgrade, like if it will give me Nougat, will it do it automatically?
Yeah.
Or do I have to?
Well, sort of semi-automatically. What it's a good idea that for, now that you turn on the phone is go in the settings. That's up at the top. If you slide it down, there's a little gear. You hit that. In the settings, at the very bottom of the setting page, I'm not sure exactly what it says on that Moto X, but it'll say something like system or about this phone. And there'll be an update command in there that'll check the updates. And you should check the updates and get everything it offers. It will probably not be more than two downloads.
Okay.
And then once you get those, and it'll be a reboot. It'll take a while. It'll go through all the apps and all that stuff. Once it does all that, a couple of hours from now,
okay,
your phone will be as up to date as it's going to get. There may be new updates, and it'll tell you. It'll give you a notification. There's a new update for you. But you want to do everything so far. You want to do everything up to this point.
Well, I'm surprised that the battery still does work, and at the point where it, I mean, I'm surprised that it's not damaged by just sitting.
No, it won't wear out if you don't use it.
Okay.
So it's okay to have it sit. It won't be probably 100%, but it might be 90%.
Okay.
You spent money on it. Let's use it. Sure.
Yeah. Well, and, I bought it when the first price
good.
Cut.
That's a great.
And but ever since you talked highly of it, I always wanted one.
Oh.
And then I freaked out and was scared to death to use it. When I got it, I had no idea what a dual band router was and why.
We throw around such garbage. Just ignore the geeks. You don't need. But this is a great entree for you into this, right? So
great.
You can like have a little thing that you play with. You already have a computer, so you understand probably 90% of what you need to know. You'll just get to know the Android universe. And the Google Assistant's on there, and it's great.
Okay.
You can ask it questions and so forth. And, you know, treat it as like a playground.
Right.
That's the best way to do it. Don't feel the stress of, oh, I got to learn how to use this. And keep carrying your Nokia around. And just use this is kind of a toy. Maybe put a game on there that you think is fun and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I don't do games, but I, you know, I
get this texture. Get the texture app on there. Put the magazines on there. Or shopping. There you go. Get the Amazon app. The Amazon app will keep you busy. Etsy has an app.
And then all my sports sites.
There you go.
I check a lot of sports and watch a lot of sports.
What you'll really like is Google Now is on that phone, and it will give you, once it knows what teams you like, it will always keep you up to date on those teams.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a nice feature.
Yeah, I thought it stood out from all the phones that, you know, my friends talked about.
It's a great phone. Motorola, it was made when Motorola was owned by Google.
Yeah.
And they did a very nice job, I think.
Well, good. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, don't be nervous. It's okay.
Okay. Well, I'm excited now because I'm not gonna. You're right. I'm at the point where I'm not gonna stress about it.
No,
because
it's
I've
a toy.
Spent the money. So
yeah.
You know.
Think of it as mom's toy.
Okay.
You know, and just if you got a little time. It's always good to have something you're interested in as the kind of the opening. And that sports is great. You can keep track of all your teams. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, of course, photos of the family and stuff. So.
Photos is great. Put Google Photos on there if it's not on there already. That phone has a great camera. One of the things that's fun about the Moto X is you're holding it and you just jiggle at your wrist. You twist your wrist a couple of times and it launches the camera.
Yeah.
Little things like that, and start taking pictures with it. You're going to have a lot of fun.
Well, great.
And don't worry about security. It's absolutely fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing that
I understand.
So,
yeah. Because we talk about it so much.
Yeah. And since I'm so relatively ignorant about the whole universe, digital universe, I thought, well, I would be a fool if I tried to use it and being unable to update, it would just dump me into, you know,
yes,
hell.
It's not quite like that. Okay. It's people need to get malicious apps on your phone, which usually means you're being more adventurous than you should be, trying apps from strange places. Or maybe in your email, we were talking earlier, I don't know if you heard about, you get an email from Google, but it says obviously not Google, and all it has is a link to a file. You just go, yeah, right. Not for me. Bye-bye, buddy.
Yeah, I've managed, being digitally ignorant, I've managed to stumble through, the digital life this far without having any...
No pressure. You don't need to. Yeah. Only do it if it sounds like fun.
Yeah, and without getting myself in trouble. Or
you won't.
Getting
you'll be
a
fine.
Virus. And,
yeah, you'll be fine. So. Your Windows machine is much more dangerous than your Android device.
Yeah.
Hey, I have to run, Sherry. Thank
okay,
you.
Thank you so much, Leo.
My pleasure. Take care. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Talking computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones. I love Sherry. We ran out of time at the top of the hour, but I kept talking to her during the break. She was the mom who had a Nokia flip phone, and that was her primary smartphone. But at one point, a couple of years ago, she thought, well, I really ought to understand the smartphone world, and she bought herself a Moto X. It's a few years old now. Nice phone. I really liked it when it came out. But she has never used it. And she's worried now because I really sympathize. All you hear me talk about, all you hear on the news is about security issues, flaws, problems, hacks. And understandably, that might make you a little nervous about using that phone. It's not just Android, it's everywhere. So I just want to reassure you, my mom watches cable news, 24-hour news cycle, any news. You watch news, what do they tell you? The bad stuff, right? And it's gotten to the point now where she doesn't want to go out of the house because it's terrible out there. And I tell her, Mom, if you, in this day and age now, we've got our tentacles, our nervous system attached to the entire world. If you have an entire world and the only thing you're doing is looking for bad things, you can have a nonstop feed of horrific, terrifying, scary stuff. And it applies to news, but it applies to security as well. If all you're doing is reaching your tentacles out into the world and seeing what's going on and you're looking for bad stuff, there's enough, we're connected enough now that you'll find plenty. But it's probably not going to really affect you. And if you're somewhat prudent, I told her, don't go get, applications from Yuri's Application Emporium. All free, all special. Come try our special version of Facebook. Oh, you'll love it. Don't mind the Russian characters. If you're not too adventurous, you're really safer. It's the people who are going out and, being adventurous and going to get in trouble. Stick with known programs from well-known companies. I told her, start with the Google apps and get them from Google. You'll be okay. It's not that dangerous, really. The world isn't that unsafe. It's not. It's fine. Most people are just fine. It's just if all you do is you look at the news, you're going to get this terrible kind of misunderstanding about how the world is. You see it if you're ever in an area where there's a disaster. We had big fires up here in Northern California. And people assume if they come up our way in the wine country of Northern California, it's just going to be flattened. And it isn't. I even thought that. But, we've been driving. We went up to Napa for the weekend and had a wonderful time. Didn't see any fire damage. There's spots and places, yes. It's a terrible thing. But it is not as – I remember when the earthquake in 1989, when you got the impression that San Francisco was burning to the ground. No, just this little block. But that's where all the cameras are. That's where all the news people are. It looks like the whole city's in flames. The whole Google Android universe is not in flames. We're fine. Everything's okay. I talk about it so you know, so you're knowledgeable, but I don't mean to scare you. I really don't. I apologize if I have. Mark in Idaho, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Mark. Mark, come,
hello,
to
Leo.
Come to me, my Beamish boy. Hey, how you doing?
Good. How you doing?
I'm very well. What can I do for you?
Well, I've got a Remix Mini that they aren't updating anymore.
Oh, isn't that sad?
It is. Mm. I don't know how familiar you are with the Remix Mini, but...
Yeah. So, do you want to... Are you looking for something to replace it with, or...?
Either that or update the software. I've been looking at the Chromeboxes, but I can't find one that we can play Android games on it right now.
Yeah, I think the Android stuff is only on touchscreen Chromebooks. So right. Remix had this crazy idea, but I liked it, of making basically a PC based on Android.
Right.
And it turns out, I mean, that's basically, you know, now become mainstream thanks to Google putting the Android Play Store onto its Chromebooks. But you want a desktop-style computer. You want a full screen and keyboard.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know of, and I don't think they've made it, any Chromebooks, or Chrome, they call them Chromeboxes, that support, right. I think they do not, in fact, support Android. Now, that may just be a matter of time. I wouldn't be surprised.
I found some that are pending, like from Asus.
Exactly.
And a couple others that are pending.
Yeah, if you're patient. Does the Remix not work at all anymore?
Oh, it's working. I'm just worried about the security since they're not updating anymore.
Yeah. Well, again, like I told Sherry, if you stick with apps that, you know, are from known good companies, your security's fine. Nobody's going to hack you, remote control hack you, although it might be theoretically possible. Highly unlikely. Highly unlikely.
Right.
So I think you're fine to keep using it until... those Chromeboxes come out. Yeah, Acer is making. Let me see. Somebody's just sent me a link to the a new Acer Chrome base. Let's see, because that would be great, wouldn't it, if they supported the Android Play Store? Then you have all the Chrome extensions plus any Android apps that are missing. Yeah, I don't know if this Chrome base has Android. That's the problem. I think part of this is it requires touch, or they really want you to have touch. And that's missing on a lot of Chromeboxes. Now, this one is, this Chrome base, is it a touch screen? I can't tell. Yeah, it is. Touch control. So maybe now that we're starting to see Chrome OS-based computers, as opposed to laptops, Chromebooks, we might start to see Android on there. That would be really great. Because then you've got millions of apps. Now, remember, I use Android on my Pixelbook. It's of limited, you know, it's not all the apps work. A lot of the apps aren't resized, so they probably look like they do on the Remix, like you're using a phone on a screen, right?
No, the Remix looks like a real regular
all
computer.
All the apps run full screen.
Yeah.
Oh, they're doing something.
Not every app works, but most of them do.
Well, that's, yeah. So... they're doing something interesting.
Like a real computer.
Yeah. Well, I understand, but generally speaking, the app has to be written in such a way as to sense the larger screen and fill it up. And this was a problem when the iPad first came out as well. A lot of apps, you know, that work on the iPhone look funny on the iPad. Well, that's good news. I just patience on your part. Otherwise, look at a Chromebook. I mean, you don't want a laptop. One of the things you could do with a Chromebook, though, is I think you could attach it to a bigger screen. That's an interesting question. I don't know if the Android store would work that way. I think I'm going to tell you what. I will keep my eye peeled for Chromebooks. Here's Asus Chromebox 3. It'll have an 8th generation Intel Core processor. That's pretty impressive. But again, will it have the Play Store? That's what we're looking for. And just looking quickly at the specs. Yes, it will. All right. So here's the good news. There are new Chromeboxes. They were announced at CES that will support the Play Store. Here's one, the ASUS Chromebox 3. Very much like the Remix. Better, probably. We'll also see one, it looks like, from HP. But the Chromebox 3 does specifically say the Google Play Store Android apps will be on it. You'll probably need a touchscreen to work with that. Hey, thanks for the call. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're going to take a break. Come back. More of your calls still to come. I'll try to reassure you. It's not as scary as we make it out to be. Technology's great. There must be some way out of here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, coming straight at you with the latest technology news. 8888 Ask Leo. If you've got a question or a comment or a suggestion, we go to San Antonio, Texas. Our next caller, David. Hi, David.
Hi, Leo. My question is this. I was working on a Word document, and before I could back it up, the computer itself crashed because the battery died. So it asked me if I wanted to launch automatic repair.
Yes.
So I was thinking it was the Word document.
Yes.
No, it started wiping out my entire Windows 10 operating system.
Oh. So it wasn't Word asking you that. It was Windows asking you that.
Correct. And now we're stuck with a choose an option window of blue death, or the window of blue death.
The blue screen of death. Oh, no. Or what's the other options?
So it says continue, use the other another operating system, which I was thinking about trying to set it up with Linux or something. Maybe just wiping it out.
Is your chief concern at this point recovering your data? Do you have backups of your data?
We do not. And the other concern is we were paying for Windows 365, but we had downloaded Windows 10 from the free download. So we didn't have – I didn't do a backup. My wife did it. And so
the good news, Office 365 is a subscription. You can download it and download it and download it all you want.
Okay.
That's not a problem. Windows 10, once it's activated, I don't know if it was activated on that machine or not. It was. Once it's activated on a machine, you can download it again from Microsoft. Get it from Microsoft. Don't get it from anybody else.
Okay.
Download it from Microsoft. Reinstall it. It will activate again. So you're not out of luck in the sense that that computer can be brought back to the way it was before you used it, you know, with a fresh install. In fact, you'd probably be a good, it sounds like, here's what I think happened. Not only did that die, but during the process of dying, it trashed the disk. That's why you were being asked if you want to recover it. Something got messed up when it died, not just your Word document. Now, the good news is generally when that happens, it's a part of the disk, not all the disk, and most of your data is probably completely attacked, if not all of it. It could simply be a little teeny bit in the Windows boot stuff that was just enough so that Windows couldn't start up, right? But the rest of the disk is okay. So before you do anything more, stop.
Okay.
The problem is, as soon as you start...
I went through quite a bit of repairing the disk. Because it wasn't until about a third of the way through did I realize what was going on. So I guess I'm going to have to take it to a more professional.
It depends how much you want that data. If you really want that data, if you bring it to a shop, you know, anybody, any computer expert. Of course, it's hard to find a good computer expert. Who knows? You know, anybody can hang out a shingle. But if you can find somebody trustworthy, that person can easily pull the disk out of the device. Is it a laptop or desktop?
It's a laptop.
Okay. Even so, usually very easy to take the disk out, connect it to another computer that's already running Windows, and examine the disk and say, yeah, here's all your stuff. Copy it out for you and then say, okay, we're done. And then how old was the computer?
We had just got it refurbished online, so... But to be honest with you, I don't know how old it originally was.
Wait a minute. You got it refurbished online?
Yeah, from Best Buy.
Oh, good. Okay, so you brought it into them.
No, we bought it online.
Oh, you bought it. I'm sorry. You didn't refurbish it yourself. You bought it refurbished. So, good news. Best Buy owes you a new hard drive. Because that hard drive, that quote refurbished hard drive, failed on you. And that's where all your troubles began. In fact, I would bring it to the Geek Squad at Best Buy and say, dudes, I just bought this. It failed. Get my data off this drive. You owe me. And then put a fresh drive in this computer because that's what's wrong.
Okay.
That's easy. They can do that. As I said, they'll pull it out, they'll attach it to another computer, copy your data off. Some data may be lost. You know, it's hard to say what that rebuild did. And anytime you access a drive and write to the drive, there's always the potential of overwriting data. But let's hope most of it's still there. They can copy it off. And they owe you, was it within the last few months?
No, unfortunately, it was a year ago or so.
Oh, you're out of warranty now. So they don't owe you a new hard drive, but that hard drive
just made it a doorstop for a while because I didn't know what to do with it.
Yeah. I think because it's out of warranty, you're going to pay for a new drive. The good news is a new drive is not expensive. See if you can get a deal with them. You bought it from them. Talk to them and say,
let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Would I be able to insert like a new solid state drive?
You bet.
Okay.
You bet. I would bet
if it was an older one that it had to be.
Sure. It'll actually speed up things considerably.
Awesome. You know what? It made my day.
I think you're good. I think what happened when the power went out on that thing, it barfed all over the hard drive. That's why it's trying to rebuild it. Don't do any more.
The other thing that's been going on with it, and I've heard you talk about it before, is all of a sudden I can't run it without the cord in it. The battery itself seems to have also died.
This is an important lesson about refurb, is it's used. It's a used.
Right.
How much refurbishing went on is a question. So that, for instance, that battery is worn out. It's dead. They didn't put a new battery in it, so that wasn't part of the refurbishment. Sounds like they didn't put a new hard drive in it either. So that was a pretty worn out computer. And maybe for them, refurbishment meant, well, we took a rag and we kind of polished it up a little bit. That's the difference. It just depends on, that's why when I say buy a refurb, I say generally get it from the company that made the hardware and make sure that it has the full manufacturer's warranty and it's late model. Because the chances are that was a computer somebody bought and returned immediately and they can't sell as new. What you got was somebody bought a new computer at Best Buy, traded in a really old computer. Best Buy did a minimal amount to make it look fresh. Obviously didn't replace the battery, didn't replace the hard drive, probably literally just cleaned it and sold it to you, and they called it refurbed.
Because we bought a refurb in, 2010 for a desktop from Woot, and I'm still using it, and it still works great.
You lucked out. But that won't always be the case. In this case, you got the other side of the stick. Generally, don't think of refurb as we fixed it up as good as new. That's not necessarily. It really depends on the company's policies. In this case, it clearly was not as good as new. Hey, thanks for the call. You should be able to get your data. Let's cross our fingers anyway. Chris Marquardt, photo expert, coming up with some photo tips right after this. Hey, can I tell you about Carbonite? Yes, I can. Carbonite. Unfortunately, in the radio ads, we only have a little time. I don't get to tell you really about what I think. So let me tell you what I think. Carbonite, we've talked about so long, and I think, unfortunately, I put the concept in most people's heads that it's some sort of consumer cloud backup, which it is. You certainly can do that, and I still do that. But they really have gone above and beyond. They've acquired companies like eVault. And they've expanded their offerings, and in particular, they've expanded them for business. In fact, if you go to the Carbonite website, you'll see it's completely redesigned, and I think a better reflection of the kinds of things Carbonite can offer you these days. Things like high availability backup for business. You know, when you're in business, every minute of downtime is business lost. So high availability solutions mean that you can get back up and running in seconds. You know, it's something that you don't really need in the home, but a business absolutely needs. Total disaster recovery solutions. You never have to worry about, for instance, ransomware. Data migration. That's great for a business because maybe you already have stuff in clouds from Google or Amazon or Apple or a variety of other companies. You never locked into one or the other. Carbonite can help you move stuff around, even from your own server to other servers. I want you to check out Carbonite's robust, they data protection platform for businesses, including, by the way, their newest, which is Carbonite Endpoint Backup. Endpoint Backup is designed for an organization with multiple locations, but they keep an eye on three key factors when you're talking about Endpoint Backup. One, vulnerability of data. Really important that your critical business data, when it's spread across multiple tens, hundreds, even thousands of employees and locations, is kept protected. Two, you want to limit bandwidth drain. You can't be spending all your time in the backup. You know, bandwidth's critical. And, of course, it's got to fit into your environment seamlessly. Carbonite solves these problems, not just for desktops, but for mobile, phone, and tablet backup, too. They've got centralized management, so you can set your own retention and access policies from one locale on all your mobile devices. You can delay backup when using cellular data or battery power, so you protect, you know, the mobile device. Rapid access for end users to any file backed up across any endpoint. And by the way, millions of endpoints, I think it's up to 2 million in any given vault, and as many vaults as you need, so it scales as big as you need. Take a look at Global Deduplication. They're the only company that can do it. They've got the patent. Quick cache, which means you back up locally and then to the cloud. Endpoint backup from Carbonite. You never lose control. You never lose your data. It's another reason Carbonite is the data protection expert. Carbonite.com. Go to the new website and take a look. It is fantastic. Read up on the endpoint data protection solutions they offer, all the solutions they offer. Carbonite.com. I wonder how many of us grew up listening to that song and got into photography because of Paul Simon. Maybe quite a few. It's time for our photo segment with Chris Marquardt. He is a professional photographer, does a great podcast, many great podcasts, including Tips from the Top Floor, leads photographic workshops at discoverthetopfloor.com, and joins us every week to help us enjoy photography better. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I am great. It's great to have you on the show again.
Well, and the Kodak song reminds us that Kodak is still around. They still make film. They still do a few other things. And one thing that is...
They're doing Bitcoin miners now.
That's actually what I want to talk about today.
That's
it's not
crazy.
Really photography related. No, I want to talk about Kodak Coin. Have you heard of that?
Yes. They announced this at the CES. Is it not just them jumping on the Bitcoin cryptocurrency bandwagon?
Possibly. Now, I just wanted to briefly... I know people have probably seen this in the news somewhere and gone, what is that thing? And I just want to shed some light on what that actually could mean or what they might do, because there is not much information online. At this point, it is pretty much just a promise. No, they have nothing built yet, at least nothing to show for it.
But they are at least aiming this at photographers, right?
Of course. They're throwing around the blockchain thing, and people are all excited about blockchains, even though many don't really know what a blockchain is.
Yes,
exactly. So what they're doing, and this is a timely thing, because I think in a couple of days, they are planning to do what's called an ICO. It's like if you have stock and you do an IPO, but just with a coin, so an ICO, initial coin offering.
Completely unregulated, I might
coin.
Add. So as
of
with any unregulated financial activity, let the buyer
beware. Of course
beware.
It is. And this is no financial advice here, okay?
Yes.
Just making that very clear. So what Kodak has done, they haven't really done anything, but they licensed their name to a company that calls themselves Kodak One.
I think that's important because Kodak went bankrupt. But
they did, yes.
They're still kind of around. This company, Kodak One, is in Rochester, where Kodak's famous headquarters was. But it's not the same company.
It's not the same company. It's Kodak Alaris, which is I think their pension fund, but they are now also still making films. So under the Kodak brand, the Kodak label has been stuck on many things. And one of those things is now this Kodak coin. Now, what they claim they want to do is, it's pretty much digital asset management. So we're talking about
this is actually something much needed, right? Because, for instance, one of the problems photographers has, people steal their photos and they post them on blogs and other places, and there's really no easy way to figure that out.
Yes. And what they will use is a blockchain. What they claim to use is a blockchain. And a blockchain in this context is pretty much just a ledger that all those photo ownerships are recorded on. So it's pretty much a book that has all those ownerships recorded on, the licensing terms recorded on. And as a photographer, you want to record your photo ownership on that blockchain, you'll have to use a token. And that token is called Kodakcoin. So it is the thing that makes this work.
Got it.
That fuels all this. You pay Kodakcoin to register something on that chain, and then someone else pays Kodakcoin if they want to license your photos because they are now on that chain, and you get some money if someone licenses your photos or some Kodakcoin. It's a market. That's what a blockchain is in this context. And they claim they want to expand this to more, to photographers and venues and models and things. But in general, that token can be used. And it can be traded. So it's a utility token. It has an actual use, but it's also an investment token. So you can buy these tokens in the ICO. It's like a Kickstarter pretty much for that thing. You put your trust into the success of that project, and then you buy the tokens.
Do you get ownership in anything if you buy this ICO? I mean, is it like stock where you get some ownership in this company?
Well, it's not clear yet how they want to do this. There are others who do this based on an existing blockchain, like for example, the Ethereum blockchain is very often used for for token.
I know recording artists have sold records using blockchain. If you think of it as just a database, as a giant decentralized, and that's the key, no one company controls it, database that verifies the authenticity of the transaction. I think this makes a lot of sense.
With Kodakcoin, even that is not clear to me yet. It's not clear if this is really a decentralized database, if they want to keep control over it, or if they want to give up that control. At this point, you have to put your trust into the success of that project. I haven't seen a white paper yet. I haven't seen a proof of concept yet. There is another project out there that I've recently come across. It's called PhotoChain.io. They want to do the exact same thing. They want to do license management, create a license market. They have their own token. It's called Photon. They have a working prototype. They have a white paper. They have, you can get on a Telegram channel and talk to their CEO. They're more accessible. I haven't seen that from Kodakcoin. So again, I'm not giving advice here. I'm just looked at these things and it's interesting. The other thing that Kodak or someone who licensed their name has done is come up with a Bitcoin miner, a piece of hardware that mines Bitcoin.
You can buy it. You can buy this.
Well, you can rent. No, no, you can rent it.
Or you don't even buy it.
And then you get something back or not. And this thing, I haven't really looked that deep into it, but it didn't look very attractive to me. So the whole blockchain thing is definitely going to yield a few things in some areas. If it will do that for photography, I have no idea. Kodak, the name, I mean, the name is it's a brand and it's a very well-recognized brand. People know Kodak.
Yeah, but as with many brands, and I'll include Polaroid in this, Packard, Bell, these brand names have outlived the companies, in effect, and now are being licensed to make you feel all warm and fuzzy. But I don't know how much relationship they have to the original brands. Kodak is also selling a Super 8 film camera for many thousands of dollars. It is
and
not.
They have, and they have brought back the film for it, Ektachrome for it.
That I'm in love with. Keep doing that.
It's an interesting development there, but you're totally right. The license deals that we see with Kodak, with German brands like Rollei, for example, you now get the Rollei brand on a lot of things that don't look like any German engineers ever touched them. so we're looking at a really strange thing. Do not just trust the name.
No. There are two takeaways here. One is that, be cautious because none of this is regulated. It's very fast moving. It's kind of a bubble right now. But the other side of it is legitimate, that there is a problem that needs to be solved, the rights, digital rights problem for photographers. And this might well be, blockchain is a really interesting technology that might be exactly the right technology to solve this. And in order to do a blockchain, you have to have some sort of proof of work, and for that reason, they're creating a coin that is, in effect, a proof of work. So I think all of this kind of makes sense, but you're right. We need to know a lot more before we can say.
And if anyone wants to invest, do your due diligence. Make sure you look at what they have to offer, if they have to offer anything at all at this point.
Yeah. Loquacious has written a new theme song. Coda coin, we bring you the nice bright coppers. I don't know. We'll have to work on that a little bit. And in fact, the chat room also suggested that you and I start a new blockchain-based coin. We'll call it Ponzi coin. And
I think something like that already exists, probably.
It's hard to understand. The mathematics are complicated. But unfortunately, when greed gets in the picture, there are people who are out there to take your money. On the other hand, there are some very good, useful applications. This might well be one of them. We could find out more at Kodak.com. Thank you, Chris Marquardt. DiscoverTheTopFloor.com to find more of Chris's work and all about his workshops. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Is there really a Ponzi coin already?
Well, I think a couple of ICOs have been shut down because they, in effect, were Ponzi's.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's not clear to me that all cryptocurrencies aren't.
But there are tens of thousands of coins out there. I'm pretty sure there's a Ponzi coin as well.
Well, I'm just going to go to coinmarketcap.com. There's the guy who's making money, by the way. He doesn't sell any cryptocurrency. He just has a site where you can find out what your cryptocurrency is worth.
Wasn't that where in the gold rush those who sold the shovels made most of the
there
money?
There is a Ponzi coin.
There's one, yeah.
It's up 59%. Let's all get in on it.
No.
It's hysterical. That cracks me up. It's brand new, too. Chance to get in on the ground floor of the Ponzi scheme. Isn't that hysterical? Chris, I'm glad you talked about this because I really didn't know anything about it and I was very curious.
Well, I've got a few questions, so I thought it would be...
Yeah, good subject.
It would be good to briefly bring it up.
We actually did a whole segment on blockchain, trying to understand it yesterday on the new screensavers. I don't think we made much progress.
Well, if you want to get in on a photo coin, the photo chain, to me, at this point, looks much better than Kodak coin.
There's photo chain also. And I'm very interested in Telegram's offering, although they're trying to raise billions of dollars, which is interesting.
Has Telegram also come up with an ICO?
Yeah. Telegram's doing a $2.5 billion ICO.
Ooh.
And they're going to have their own tokens for payments on Telegram.
It's interesting because Telegram is now huge. Also the platform that most ICOs go to talk
Isn't
to
that
their investors. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So it's, you know, kind of, I don't know. Comes down whether you trust Pavel Durov, I guess. I don't know.
Well, and the entire ICO field is mostly based on trust at this point, like Kickstarter.
Yeah. Thank you. As always, a pleasure.
Absolutely. Talk to you again in a week.
Take care. Bye, Chris.
Take care.
This sounds so old now. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Getting jiggy with it. 88. He's such a nice boy, that Will Smith. Such a nice boy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number if you want to talk high tech. I've been trying to explain. I think I do a good job of explaining cryptocurrencies. I hope I do. But then the underlying technology of cryptocurrencies is so arcane and weird, and yet it's now totally in the consciousness, because everybody's talking about blockchain and tokens and ICOs, and I think people are throwing that word around. I think that it does not, that word does not mean what you think it means. I don't know if people really understand when they say, well, there's a company. I'll give you an example. The Long Island Iced Tea Company. I don't know what they sell. I'm thinking they probably sell a beverage, probably an adult beverage of some kind. I don't know. Maybe business wasn't that great. But they decided they're in Hicksville, Long Island. So the Long Island part's real. they sell non-alcoholic beverages. And they decided, well, Long Island Iced Tea Corp, that's just not doing it for us. So they renamed the company to the Long BitChain, a blockchain corp. The Long Blockchain Corp. Shares in the company rose 289%. This unprofitable iced tea company just changed its name to blockchain, and boom. Oh, I got to give me some of that. You know, I don't even know if they're going to have anything. I guess they say they're going to get in the blockchain. It doesn't matter, really, does it? I don't know. That's quite a pivot. That's what they call it in Silicon Valley. They're pivoting. Donna's on the line from Arizona. Hello, Donna. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling. What can I do for you?
I've been subscribing to the MSN Butterfly service for many, many years now.
Oh, dear.
Well, I didn't think it would be high on your list, but I've been experiencing a problem where we either get kicked offline or a pop-up window comes up saying out of memory at line one.
So when you got the service, you got some hardware with it as well, right?
No.
It's on a regular computer. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I use Windows devices, and they're both Windows 10.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if Microsoft's updating that software. They clearly would love you to move off of that. I don't know if MSN is in active development. For instance...
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you, because I noticed that the computers are 64-bit and the MSN is 32-bit, so I think that could be part of the conflict I'm having.
Well, there's a lot of 32-bit software still out there. Microsoft would love to get rid of 32-bit software, because that 32-bit subsystem that they're using to run it is a security hazard, frankly. But they haven't gotten rid of it yet, probably to some degree because they still have MSN Butterfly.
All right.
Let me just see what the current status. I know they want you to use Outlook.com instead of Butterfly for your mail. You know that, right?
And I want to switch over to Gmail because everyone I know has it and they like it.
So here's what I would do. The problem is everybody knows your old email address, right?
Right.
Your MSN email address. So don't get rid of, at least not right away, your MSN mail. Convert it to Outlook.com, which you should be able to do for free. I mean, what we want to do is stop paying for MSN, right? MSN was Microsoft's kind of private internet, and really the internet is all you need, and you can get that easily. Do you get your internet access from MSN? Or do you have an internet service provider?
Well, we use them for internet, and I have Google Chrome on the computer.
Okay, so you have dial-up from MSN, in other words.
No, I do not.
You do not.
Premium service.
Oh, good. But it's still from MSN.
Yes, MSN Butterfly.
So that is the issue at this point, is they're your internet service provider.
Yeah, I guess they are.
Yeah. And how much a month are you paying, and what do you get, if you don't mind me asking?
I pay like $65 for a year.
Wow, that's a good deal.
And you get, you know, your mail, and you get your browser.
And it's not too slow? You feel like it's fairly fast?
It moves okay, but lately in the last couple months, we get a pop-up window. You know, there's no internet connection. But, yeah. You know, if I'm on Google Chrome doing some internet surfing, I never get a message like that. So I just...
Yeah, you're still using the MSN as your internet. So you're still getting your internet service from MSN. My guess, you'd have to do some digging, is that they're reselling... It's coming in over your phone line. I'm wondering if they're doing.
Well, we don't have a phone line. It comes. We just have internet through a cable company.
Oh, it's through. Oh.
You know, that's how we get our feed for our service.
Oh, so you're not using MSN for internet. You're just using the MSN service on top of your cable company internet.
Well,
yes.
I don't use cable company email. I use cable company.
Yes, I understand that. Oh, this is a relief. So you've got good high-speed internet from your cable company. You're not dependent on Microsoft for that. You're merely using their Butterfly service as a portal. So you can get internet service from them, but you're not doing that. You're using the Butterfly service as a portal to the internet, and in particular for your email, right?
Right.
So at this point, what they want you to do anyway is to convert to your email, instead of using MSN software, to use just the Google Chrome and Outlook.com. So you're going to want to look in their support section to see what you need to do to convert that. Here's what we want to do. What I want you to do is keep your MSN address for a while, because that's how people know how to reach you, right?
Right.
But eventually get off.
For a lot of things.
Right. Eventually you want to get off MSN. The nice thing is you could create a Google Mail account, a Gmail account, and have it pick up your mail from MSN.
Oh, you can?
Yeah. The key on that is I think you're going to need to move to Outlook to do that, because I don't know. See, Google uses some traditional standard internet, we call them protocols, languages for communicating with mail servers. If MSN supports either POP, which is the old standard, or the new standard IMAP, then it's very simple. You just get those settings, put it in Gmail. It will every hour go out and get your MSN mail. What you should still try to do is tell your correspondents, everybody you work with, slowly move them over to the new address. But at least you won't miss any mail, because your MSN mail will get picked up by Google and be in your Google inbox. Now, that does require that they're somehow using a standard. I bet you MSN does not, but I bet you Outlook does. So you're still keep your MSN.com address, but you'll be using Outlook to see your mail. This is all, I don't know this off the top of my head.
I use the Outlook inside of the MSN more
Excellent.
But that's not the Outlook that comes with Microsoft Office. I'm not using it that way.
No. And that, thank you, Microsoft, for confusing the issue. Yeah, once again, there used to be called Hotmail. Their online mail service, Outlook.com, is in no way related to their desktop mail program, Outlook, despite the name. So, yes, you can use Google Chrome to get mail at Outlook.com. It's totally,
confusing.
I don't blame you. It's not your fault.
I think Gmail's confusing, but I'm learning.
It is confusing because Google doesn't do it standard either, but at least it's a widely used service, so you know lots of people know. So Mike B. in the chat room is saying that MSN does use the IMAP protocol. That's very good news. You're going to want to go to the MSN support section, and what you'll need is the server name and login information for that. And that's what you're going to put into your Google Mail settings so that the Google Mail will go get your MSN mail. And all this is a bridge so that people who used to email you can still email you at MSN.com for a while. You're going to want to wean them off of this, tell everybody, but it might take a year or two. That's fine. The one thing that you'll have to remember is you're going to have to keep paying for MSN, that $5 a month that you pay, until you're done. And at that point, you can say, okay, I'm not going to pay anymore, but nobody's email to me at MSN.com is going to work anymore. So that might give you a little incentive to, tell your cars, maybe even put it in your signature. Hey, thanks for writing to me at MSN.com. My new address is, at gmail.com. I don't think Microsoft's made an announcement, but I can almost promise you MSN is not long for this world. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I know that's kind of complicated. Did that make any sense?
I take shorthand, so I've been taking.
Oh, you are smart. And we will also put the best we can on our website, techguylabs.com. There is, and Mike B. has given me a link, there is a mail settings information for Outlook anyway, and you can, once you move over to Outlook from MSN, you can have Google get that mail. We'll put a link to that site up on our website, techguylabs.com. So you can, does that make sense for you? Are there any other services you use from MSN that you don't want to lose?
No, we have like our favorites and things, but I can.
Those you can export out and import them into your browser of choice, Chrome, Internet Explorer, or Microsoft's Edge. All of those you can save, just export them.
I do have folders set up in the Outlook portion on the MSN service, so that those things are what's holding me back from making the big change, because I know I need to move all that stuff.
Well, but if you're using Outlook, you can keep using Outlook
I'm not
free.
Using Outlook in the office, though.
Not the desktop Outlook. If you're using I'll call it Outlook.com. If you're using Outlook.com, you can keep using that even after you kill MSN. You'll lose the MSN.com address, but that Outlook account will continue. It's free.
Okay.
So those folders will persist. It's true if you use the desktop version of Outlook, you could download those folders. But in the meanwhile, you can kind of recreate them on Google. I don't know. There's a lot of work that goes into them, I know.
Yeah. Okay. Because I've kind of been looking into that.
Yeah.
I think it's smart.
Yeah, well, I think it's smart to assume that Microsoft's going to phase this out. I'm frankly amazed that it still exists. I had no idea.
I've been with them like probably 18, 20 years.
Yeah, of course. It's like AOL. There's still a lot of people that use AOL.
Right.
Because why change? You've been using it. But both these companies would really love to stop supporting it. The fact that they're still 32-bit means, at some point, Microsoft's going to come along and say, all right, you got 6 months, but you got to get out. It's closing time.
Yeah. But you'd probably tell me.
You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know anything. Let me ask my Windows guys. They'll probably be just as stunned as I am to know that the butterfly still flies, but I will ask them about that. But it would be, I think it would be prudent. And by the way, you'd benefit from more modern technologies in many ways to move on.
Right, off. And I know you say that Google Mail is a lot more secure.
Secure, spam-free. Microsoft does not do a good job of killing spam. There's just a lot of reasons. And it's free.
That's true.
I'm pretty sure that everything that you have on MSN can be somehow exported and moved over. I just don't know exactly how. Your contacts, for instance, you have an address book on MSN?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what you're going to look for is exporting commands. Or if it doesn't say export, save. So you're going to look for, I hear your shorthand. That's awesome. So export or save. Because that's what you want. You want to somehow export all the settings, all the addresses, all the folders, all that work you've put in over the last 18 years into Butterfly. You want to somehow, if you can, get that into a newer platform. In all likelihood, Microsoft will continue this process of moving you to their newer stuff like Outlook.com. They're not going to cut you off. They're just going to slowly, nudge you over.
All right.
Good luck. I'm glad you called. I think this is a smart thing to be doing, to at least start.
All right. I have a lot more questions, but I'll call you another time.
Well, I have a minute. What else?
Let me see. I had some notes here. I know you said that Windows updates to let them do the creator's update, let them notify you and not...
Yeah, normally that's the case, but Microsoft just 2 weeks ago said, okay, if you haven't got the fall creator's update, get it. So it would be okay to do that now.
It would? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. If I think of anything in the future, I'll call you.
I'm so glad. I'm glad you called, Donna. I'm glad to help.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
That is, I had no idea they were still doing it. I'm like, I'm searching for MSN. What? The butterfly, what? They do, there probably are people listening who are on the dial-up internet service from them. That's what I first thought she was talking about. She's using their software. You can still download it. God, I can't believe it. Our show today brought to you by TurboTax. Oh, man, I'm sorry. Did that startle you? Yes. It's April 15th is around the corner. Tax time is coming. I've used TurboTax. You know, it's funny. I used TurboTax for years. I love TurboTax. And then because we have a business and stuff, and the business is all, you know, it's a pass-through LLC, so it's all tied up. We have, you know, a CPA and a bookkeeper and all that stuff. So I let them do the taxes. I don't have to think about it anymore. But then a couple of years ago, my mom said, you know, I pay a lot of money to get my taxes done. I said, Mom, your taxes, you're 85. How hard could they be? I'll do them. And I rediscovered TurboTax, and I'm so happy. I love TurboTax. Completely online now. I mean, I go back to the days when you bought software, remember, at the store, and you'd go to the store and you'd install it, and you'd buy it and you install it and all that stuff. Now it's all online. It's easy to use. It's always up to date because it's online. So all the new tax rules are in there. And they have a new service I love, TurboTaxLive.com/TechEye. So TurboTax Live is in addition to TurboTax. So you can still do TurboTax, the software. But, and this happens sometimes, maybe you want to talk to somebody. Maybe you're thinking the new tax bill next year, taxes are going to change. Is there anything I need to do to prepare for that? Maybe some tax planning. So here's what you do. You go to TurboTaxLive.com. You can talk to a CPA or an EA, flat rate, as much as you need, right? You will see them on video. It's one-way video. They won't see you. Don't worry. And you get all the advice, all the information you need. Talk live with a CPA or EA. They'll be seeing your return. They'll understand what you're talking about. You can ask them all the questions. You can even have the expert review your return before you file and make any necessary changes. And as always with TurboTax, it's backed with their 100% accuracy guarantee. So you'll file with complete confidence. It's such a great feeling when you're done. And to have the extra help of a CPA or EA just makes it even better. Know where you stand. Do your taxes this year the easy way, the fast way, with TurboTax Live. Go to TurboTaxLive.com/TechGuy. TurboTaxLive.com/TechGuy. What a great idea. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, all the modern, new, exciting stuff. And we occasionally do, as we did with that last caller, some computer archaeology. Go back in time to systems we used in the 80s. Well, it's not that old. She said she'd been on MSN for 18 years. So since the last century, anyway, 8888, ask Leo, the phone number, 888-827-5536. I know there are a lot of you who are probably still using MSN dial-up or AOL dial-up. And there's a cautionary tale in our chat room, which I think is very apropos. And I'm saying this to the geeks out there. Wiggs said, I was trying to help an elderly woman and her son with a computer. She was using AOL. I told her, get rid of AOL. It'll save you money. That was several years ago, says Wiggs. She deleted AOL and has never been able to figure out how to use her computer again. We have to be careful as geeks because we've all done this. You go in, you go, oh, come on, man. You can't have 8,000 icons on your desktop. Let me just type real fast. You go, there, it's all fixed, and you walk away. And the poor person has no idea where anything is ever again. They can't. Basically, you've disabled them. And it's hard for us because we know how to use it. It's really the problem the computer industry has in general. All this stuff is designed by people who know how to use it. You know, engineers. They don't understand how normal people think. They don't get it. And so as a result, unfortunately, there's a certain arrogance. We all have, all of us geeks have, and certainly Silicon Valley has in spades that, we just do it this way. Yeah, everybody understands this, right? The funny thing is, you'd think the millennials, the young people growing up who have grown up now, we have the first generation of adults who have grown up with computing and the internet in their lives, their whole lives. Yeah, admittedly, it was AOL, you know, in the beginning, but they've grown up with the internet. You would think they would be completely, we even call them digital natives, completely comfortable, understand it all. They don't. They are confused. They're maybe more confused than your grandma. at least grandma and my generation had to figure it all out from the beginning, and we learned about it, and no one was there to tell us, so we figured it out, and we kind of know how to use it. The younger people today are surprisingly computer illiterate. They know how to do Snapchat. They know how to do a few things. They're great in their alley, their lane, but I don't think they have the same kind of understanding of how stuff works that we had to have because it was the only way we could use it. So I don't know what to say about that except read a book, kids. Just, you know, read a – no. I do. I have to say with my own kids as much as I can, I try to entice them. I have a great book, a wonderful book. I would love to teach this class to high schoolers, How to Build a Computer from First Principles. You start knowing nothing. It's a box of rocks, and you make a computer. By the end of the class, by the end of the book, you really understand how it all works. No one's interested. Why do I need that? I got Snapchat. I'm fine. I got my iPhone 10. I'm fine. David, Lexington, Kentucky's next. David Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo.
Hey, how are you?
Welcome. I'm doing pretty good. I have an app question for you.
Okay.
It's kind of a weird one because I have a checklist I need to give people I work with so that we all are doing the same set of things.
Good idea.
The problem is that I don't want to waste 6 tons of paper printing up a new checklist every day when it's all the same thing. So I'd like to put it on their phones, tablets, that kind of thing.
Got it.
Problem comes with that is I'm trying to get away from something where, like a to-do list, where I then would have to go and recreate the same things every time or uncheck them every day.
You need a template.
I do, but what to-do service offers a template?
Oh, lots of them do. So let me ask you a little bit more about what you're looking for. You want a service that's web-based so that everybody can log into it?
Well, I'd actually prefer the ultimate triad to have Android, iPhone, and web.
Okay.
I might be asking too much of the world.
No. That makes sense. You want apps, you want a website, and you want templates.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the milk.
Okay, remember the milk. I have been listening to you since the early days of the screensavers way back in the day.
Oh, my goodness. So you do remember the milk.
And of yours. In fact, you suggested an app that's now indispensable to me on my Apple Watch.
What's that?
Drafts.
Oh.
I heard.
Oh, isn't Drafts amazing?
It is.
But nobody understands at all why we like it, because it's crazy. It's a text entry app for iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch. And nobody gets, well, why do you need that? Until you use it, and then you realize.
They should use it just once.
Yeah. I love it. I have it on my Apple Watch. I never remember anything anymore. I just press the button on my Apple Watch, and I say things like, chocolate cottage cheese. And then at the end of the day, I go through it all, and I put it in the right place, the to-do list or whatever. So remember the milk. You're familiar with probably. This is really fairly venerable. A couple Australian guys, I think, created it 10 years ago. It's a service you can pay for, but there's a free version of it. And I'm pretty sure I haven't used it in a long time, but I'm pretty sure I remember they do have templates. And I know they have Android and iOS apps as well.
Well, somebody else suggested to me Todoist, but I haven't downloaded it yet.
I like Todoist. It's powerful. I don't know if it does templates. Man, I am the king of to-do lists. You know why? Because I get nothing done. I literally get nothing done.
Would say the same about me.
You know people like me who are really expert on creating systems to get things done, just not on doing them. And so I have done, I started with a Franklin planner. Took the class the whole day, bought the whole darn thing. I have 4 different sizes of Franklin planners with all the inserts dating back to 2001. Then the next thing was Getting Things Done by Dave Allen. And you create 43 folders, and then there's a folder for every month and I got the system all set up. Never used it. There's something called the bullet journal. Don't do it. Got little dots and bullets and things, and I got it all set up. Never used it. I don't get anything done, but I am really good at systems for getting things done. So let me think about some There, you know, the king of all this, which is probably more than you'd want, and it's iOS only, is from the group's the company Omni Group. They make something called Omni Project.
Omni Project would be wonderful. I've seen it. It is just too much money for me.
And it's not Android, which is a negative.
No.
OneNote, somebody's suggesting, that's a good point. Microsoft's OneNote, which is available on every platform, is free, has templates. That might be a good solution for you as well. Okay. It's more than just to-do, but it has that capability.
Well, I looked at OneNote for something else. I looked at OneNote for taking notes in university.
Yeah.
And I went to Evernote instead of OneNote. But I can take another look at OneNote to see if it would do what I'm wanting to do. Yeah, because there's no saying I can't have both apps.
Yeah, yeah. I think I would start, take a look at Remember the Milk. It's $45 a year per user, so it's not free. But you don't have to pay for it. There's a free version. But if you want the syncing across all the apps kind of thing, you probably do want that.
Now, I have one last question for you, if I may.
Sure.
I listen to a lot of your shows and stuff. And have you ever thought about using Discord instead of IRC? Because I moved all of my stuff from IRC to Discord.
Discord is kind of an open source Slack. I really like it. But we use IRC and we continue to use IRC because it's a standard. Everybody understands it. And it has excellent moderation features, which even the more modern Discord lacks. But I am a big fan of Discord. I certainly, you know, messaging apps are kind of like to-do apps for me. I play with them a lot as well. But there's something about IRC that just, it's the old standard, and it just, I think it still rocks. Hey, I appreciate the kind words, and thanks for listening. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. Don't forget the website, too, because everything is there, including that book I mentioned about building a computer from the first principles, techguylabs.com. Good. Let's put that BetterCloud. Thank you. That BetterCloud link, Irvine Rob, is great. How to use OneNote to make and share shopping lists. It would be exactly the same. I actually have used Google Keep for that. That's very simple. Yeah, Heretic, we're trying to get Hussein on the on triangulation. I completely agree with him. I don't think losing is the right phrase, but I think if it is a race, China is way ahead in artificial intelligence. It's very interesting. I think it's starting to become more understood. Remember, I mean, the space race happened because we were afraid that the Russians were going to use satellites to drop bombs on us. And then it became a matter of national pride. I don't know if AI is, you know, one thing that's really changed. I think the risk of a world war has actually gone down, both because of nuclear weapon proliferation, but more importantly, because of global trade. You know, we're more useful to China as a trade partner than we are as a fiefdom or something to conquer or something to beat. Right? We're more useful to them as somebody they can sell stuff to. So I think global trade actually is a great force for peace, believe it or not. So if China, as they probably will, creates artificial intelligences that are superior to ours, doesn't mean they're going to use it to somehow dominate us. It might have an economic consequence, but they need us to be economically strong or we won't be able to make our iPhones there, buy their TVs and all of that stuff. So I don't think it's completely comparable to the space race. It's an interesting theory. And I do want to get this guy on triangulation, Amir Hussein, to talk about it because I think it's a very interesting. And this article, I think it says it's an argument. So, yeah. Are there both sides or no? No, it doesn't look like it. It's under argument, which I guess is their word for opinion in foreign policy. North Korea, I don't think we have to worry too much about North Korea. It's the same problem. I mean, if you think about it, all Kim wants to do is stay in power. He doesn't have dreams of global domination, I don't think. They can barely keep their stuff together. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888.
I like this. Ask Leo. It's the smooth jazz sounds of the Tech Guy Show.
Dolly in San Jacinto, California. Hi, Dolly.
Hi. I'm so happy to be able to talk with you. So I am a 77-year-old, and I used to work the stock market on my cell phone.
Really?
Only my cell phone. I had computers and everything, but I didn't use them. And I was able to work it really, really well. And my husband and I decided to travel the world, and we lived on his money and we played on mine. And I found that I played too much.
Uh-oh.
And now it's time to go back to work.
Uh-oh.
And this is my problem. I have just joined an association, or whatever you want to call it.
Okay.
And they work the stock market in a totally different way than anyone's ever probably heard of. And they work it with the internet and with all the algorithms and bells and whistles that are all being used these days.
Yes.
And they work it on a special platform with a brokerage company.
Okay.
And not too many brokerage companies have this special platform.
Okay.
Now, the special platform that I have called two or three other companies, and I cannot use my cell phone. My cell phone is an LG3.
So is the brokerage platform based on the web? It's a website? Or is it an application? Do you know what I'm saying? Do you use a browser to access it, or do you download and install an application?
I haven't been able to get that far, but my guess is that I access it via the browser. I could be totally wrong.
If it's browser-based, you should be able to do it on a mobile device. Because fortunately, the standards for desktop browsing and mobile browsing are well established. And both Google's Chrome on Android and Apple's Safari on iOS are really full-scale browsers. You may need to, and both of these will allow you to, in the menu, choose desktop site. And so it may be that they don't. Actually, that probably won't even come up. If the brokerage offers a mobile platform, you might even prefer to use the mobile platform. The only reason you choose desktop is if they do offer a mobile platform and you don't like it. If they don't offer a mobile platform, a mobile version of their website at all, then use the desktop. And you may be better off getting an iPad or something with a slightly bigger screen. That may be the issue, is the screen is too small. But if you have a big enough screen, there's no reason anything you would do with that brokerage you couldn't do on a mobile unless it's an application. If it's, and you understand what I'm saying, if it's a Windows application you have to download and install, it's not going to work on an iPhone. Does that make sense?
Okay. I started trying to figure this out just on Friday. So I can't answer those questions.
Yeah. But that's the question you need to have answered to know whether you can do this on your mobile or not.
Okay. But what I need to know is I'm making the assumption that a cell phone is not going to be able to do what I need to do.
Okay.
So my question to you really is, okay, as an RVer, we move around a lot.
Ah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And maybe 10 years ago, I had Verizon and I had a hotspot, and that worked fine.
Yeah.
I do not know if the hotspot is still something that I
can. Oh, yeah. You can go to Verizon, get a hotspot. A lot of RVers do that. It's probably preferable to any other method you could do in an RV. I mean, you can buy a Hughes satellite dish, but you have to reposition it every time you stop driving, or buy an expensive auto-positioning servo mechanism. It's much easier just to use, and by the way, LTE now is so widespread. Go to Verizon. You should check and see what kind of coverage they have in the places you drive to, and get one of those. And then if you can't do it on a phone, then you could use a laptop. Sure.
Okay. So if I can't do it, say I go to one of those Apple phones and one of the new ones.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Say I'm able to not do it on that.
Yeah.
And that I have to go to.
I bet, by the way, I bet you can. Do you want to tell me the name of the brokerage?
Well, one of them's TD Ameritrade.
Okay, they have an app. Now, if they have they'll be able to, you'll be able to do it in their app. So for sure, okay. Most of the big brokerages, Schwab, you know, Fidelity, Ameritrade, they have apps.
I can't do it with Schwab.
Yeah, but I'm just saying TD Ameritrade has an app. So if that's one of them, you should be okay. You could run it on an iPhone.
Okay, so if that doesn't work,
then you can get a mobile Wi-Fi device, just like you described. We used to call them MiFis. I don't remember what Verizon calls them now, but you call your Verizon store, and they'll tell you. This is a little credit card-sized device, gets its bandwidth from the mobile network, and acts as a Wi-Fi access point in your RV. You have multiple devices hooked up to it, and you should get pretty good speed.
So it's called a mobile Wi-Fi.
Well, something like that. Yeah, if you just tell them I want a MiFi, they'll remember that's what it used to be called. I don't know what they call it. I'd have to look it up. Every company has its own name for it. But if you call and you tell them what you want, they'll absolutely sell it to you. The subscription cost, typically between $30 and $60. Usually bandwidth caps are the big problem on that, so get a big one, depending on how much data you need. Shouldn't be too tough. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, more calls right after this. Mobile hotspots, possibly. Yeah, I don't play the market. I buy Vanguard index funds and I let it slide. The problem with the market right now is it's hard not to be a winner. You really don't. The question to ask is not how you're doing in an up market. The question to ask, how do you do in a down market? How do you do when the stock market's tumbling? How are your investments doing then? Because any idiot can make money in an up market. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was up 31% in 2017. Even my index funds, my S&P 500, was up 21%. Be hard not to make money. And if you're buying individual stocks, it'd be hard to beat. Not to, you know, especially if you include the transactions or management fees. But I'm not giving anybody stock advice. I'm the wrong guy. I am not interrupting Bruno. Mm-mm. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I don't believe there's such a thing as strawberry champagne. I just don't think so. I'm sorry. I find that hard to believe. Don in Culver City, California is next. Leo Laporte. Hi, Don.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
I am well. How are you?
Good. I've got an issue with malware bytes, and I have malware bytes premium. I don't know what happened.
Yeah.
Down on my lower taskbar, there was a little triangle that comes up. It said, you know, real-time protection turned off. Anyway, this happened before, and I've gone in there. But now, every time I click on malware bytes, this little window pops up. It says, cannot start, cannot connect to service.
That's concerning. I'm going to say up front, I'm not a big fan of third-party security software. Malware bytes is a good company. I'm not against them. I just don't feel it's necessary on modern versions of Windows, and it causes additional problems. This is a talk I've given many times before, so I'm not going to repeat it.
Well, I have an older Windows. I have a Windows Vista.
Yeah, if you have Vista, you probably need every bit of help you can get. Okay. I do think, though, that behavior is not normal, and it is often caused by malware. So the first thing you do if you're a malware author is you say, well, all right, I got in. Let's disable any possible protection this guy might have that might find me. Furthermore, let's block access to antivirus sites. I've seen malware do this. so that they can't do any research on me. And if we have a network-connected malware solution, like, for instance, Malwarebytes Pro, let's make sure it can't get online to download any updates. We're in. Let's not get kicked out. So that is a significant – that's something I would worry about. Now, the problem is your Malwarebytes is no longer doing its job, so you don't know what's going on. Fortunately, there are a number of online antivirus scanners you can run. I don't think they're particularly any better than the antiviruses on your system. The good news is if you can get to them, they haven't been, you know that they're good because they haven't been modified by anything on your system. Start at virustotal.com. And run a scan. Now, if you are, as I suspect, infected, it may say, no, there's no such site as virustotal.com. They probably don't want you going there. So,
well, Malwarebytes supposed to protect from all that stuff happening?
Yeah, but this is why I don't recommend antiviruses, because they don't offer, none of them offers 100% protection. In most cases, they offer less than 50% protection, which means half the time a virus gets on your system anyway.
Okay, so that was, what was that the site was?
Well, I'll give you two. Virustotal.com and then Trend Micro, another respected antivirus company, has one called HouseCall, which I think is antivirus.com, but you can Google. You can also Google online viruses. Now, there is some hope, because the chat room is sending me a link on the Malwarebytes blog that came out yesterday. And maybe this is your problem. Important, web blocking, RAM usage. Earlier this morning, we published a protection update that caused connection issues for many of our customers. Well, there you go.
Yeah, because I'm having problems like, before I would just click on Netflix and it would just come. Now I'm getting buffering and then buffering. And then
yeah.
Something like,
go to blog. Go right now.
Forever to log.
Go to blog.malwarebytes.com. They have a fix. This sounds like this is what happened. This happened yesterday. So thank you to the fellow in the chat room who found that. This is a flaw with Malwarebytes. It does underscore, I'm not going to give you this lecture again, but it underscores why I say third-party antivirus is not a good idea. This is a perfect example. This didn't protect you in any way. They screwed up, and as a result, you can't get online. Thanks. And since it gives you only it's only of dubious, value, since it doesn't protect you 100% of the time, why put up with it? Microsoft offers security essentials, even for Windows Vista, I think. Although it would be a good idea to get a more modern version of Windows if you could. I got to think that would also be a good idea. In any event, it looks like this was a error on the part of Malwarebytes. And they have a fix on their blog, blog.malwarebytes.com. Oh, thank you. See, this is why the chat room is so great. They found that blog post right away on Malwarebytes, and I'm almost certain that's the problem. If you want to be in the chat room, I'd love having you there. All the experts, irc.twit.tv, and don't forget the website. We put links to everything, including this Malwarebytes problem, up on the website, techguylabs.com. We also put audio and video of past shows, so you can go back in time, hear what we were talking about in 2005. It was probably MSN Butterfly, probably. Scott San Jose, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Scott.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome. What can I do for you?
Oh, hey. Well, for one, I want to make sure that I love the Lagunitas beer, by the way.
Oh, just around the corner. Come on over. I'll get you a beer.
Yeah. But yeah, I've been watching you. My question is more of a, because I just jumped ship from Windows Phone, and I just went to Android, and I did some research to find the perfect phone, because I wanted more of a 100% Android experience.
Yes.
And unfortunately, the Google is that, but I'm not on Verizon. I wanted to stay with my current carrier, which is T-Mobile.
I have it. I use a Pixel 2 on T-Mobile. I love it, but go ahead.
Oh, you can use a Pixel? I didn't know that.
On any phone. on any carrier, yeah. But that's all right.
Okay, so I went with the LG V30.
Great choice. Love that phone. That is basically a Pixel 2 XL. They built the Pixel 2 XL.
Yeah, I found that information out later. I'm like, oh, wow, this is cool.
Yeah, you did good.
So my main question is there was a simple feature that I used to love. I don't drive, but I like that driving mode. The hands-free, I don't like to take my phone out of the pocket.
Google has made it a download now. It's called, I think it's called Google Auto or Android Auto. I'll look it up for you and put it in the show notes. It's in the Play Store. It's from Google. Does exactly the same thing. It senses you're in the car, puts up a simplified screen, keeps you from getting text messages or bugged, allows you to have a simple interface. It's really great. What is it called? I'll find the name. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hold on a sec. I know the chat room's going to tell me before I do.
The tech guy brought you by Auto Pro TV. It's a new year.
Is it called Auto? What is it called? Yeah. No? Is this it? Yes. I didn't want to call it Android Auto because that's the name for what they do in cars that it's enabled. But this doesn't require an Android Auto car. Is that right? Yeah. So it's the is it? Well, let me look. I have it on my phone. I should have just looked on my phone. Yeah, Android Auto. So what happens when you run it is it takes over. Okay, yeah. Because I haven't run it on this phone in a while. So it will manage my phone calls. It will access my contacts, devices, location, calendar, send and review SMS messages, record audio. That's so that you can talk to it. You can have it auto launch. So I'm going to have it auto launch when I get in my car. See, I have Bluetooth pairing with my Model X. So I'm going to turn that on. And so now when I get in my car, this interface will take over. Notice it's hiding everything. I don't even have the little notifications bar at the top. Those are gone. So there's no temptation. You get maps. Oh, it came back, but then it's gone away. You can make phone calls with big buttons. You can listen. You can select your app for listening. I'm going to use audible.com. So that's now I have a big button interface to that. So this is essentially Android Auto on cars. In fact, if I turn off on your phone, if I turn off, what am I doing? If I turn off the portrait lock, I'm just curious, and I rotate it, will it rotate? Yes. So you could even do it in portrait mode. It's got the big buttons. So what you would want is something that, you could mount this on your dashboard. You probably want a USB charging cable so that you keep it charged. And, you know, if I wanted to go home, I press home, and there it's going to...
On your way home, traffic is light as usual.
It's going to navigate for me. Isn't that awesome? Oh, I know I have to go to work.
You should reach your destination by 1:45 p.m.
I should hope so. I'm here. And then you can have it navigate.
You've arrived.
Isn't that awesome? We're right next to the Petaluma Pumpkin Patch. Yeah, put it in front of the AC vent to keep it cool.
On your way home, traffic is light.
Yeah, I know. I don't care. Now, how do I get out of it? Ah, exit app. See how big that is? So this is awesome. It's free. It's called Android Auto. It's available on all Android devices. Leo Laporte, I'm not too proud to beg. Yeah, I was just looking at the Android Auto app. It's exactly what you want. What you do is you say, whenever I'm in the car, whenever I'm paired to my car via Bluetooth, take over the screen so I can't do anything distracting. It's got big buttons. It has just the fundamentals, phones, text. By the way, all by voice. Can't type. Maps. I think that's a wonderful solution. Really like it. It's called Android Auto. It's free in the Google Store. Line 4, Renee Corona. Hi, Renee.
Hello there, Leo. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, sir.
And I'm going to say thank you for my book, my Chromebook.
Oh, good. You like it?
Yes. It's a Lenovo.
Very nice.
And the price, everything it does, The only thing is I had to get used to using Google because I've never used it before.
Ah, but now you're in Google universe. Everything's Google now. Yeah.
Okay, but my main problem is my desktop. It asked me to update my Windows security, which it's done before.
Okay.
And it's updating, and it comes up to 80% and stops.
See, this is why I like Chromebooks. You don't have to worry about that.
So it stops, and it I left it on there to see if it would be go forward, which it did not.
Hey.
So I had to disconnect the power, and then I connected it, and it, my old version of Windows came up.
Yeah.
It did that three times to me.
Yeah.
Now, all it says is it's going to restart previous 10 programs. Well, it's been doing that.
Oh, were you trying to upgrade from Windows 7 to 10? Or was it just the regular patches?
It was just the regular patches.
Oh, okay.
But now all I get is the little blue window from Microsoft. And it says here, restoring previous 10. And then it just keeps going on and on and on.
Oh, my God. Thank you, Microsoft. Thank you. Nice job, Microsoft.
And so there I'm stuck with that.
Well, it's not your fault. It is not at all unusual, unfortunately.
Oh.
And in Microsoft's, you know, to be fair to Microsoft, updating an operating system while it's running is a non-trivial thing to do. I've often likened it to pulling a tablecloth out from under a fully set dinner table and then putting a new one in,
right?
All without disturbing the china. Not an easy thing to do. The fact that it works at all is amazing. However, it is not at all unusual. Probably, I mean, there's so many things that can happen that can go wrong here. It may well be something's blocking it. Do you have security software on your system?
Just the Microsoft.
Good.
Security.
That won't block it.
Yeah.
But many third-party solutions will say, hey, you can't change the operating system.
No, I take your advice. I didn't.
Good man.
Anything.
Good man. I bet it was the Fall Creators Update.
Well, it started, like I said, a couple of weeks ago.
I bet it was. This is a big update. This is the equivalent of a service pack, although Microsoft would hate it if I told you that.
Okay.
But that's basically, it's much more than just a, you know, fix this or that, the monthly patches. This is the big one. And Microsoft, this is their new plan. Is Windows 10, they say, is the last version of Windows, and we're going to update it once or twice a year with big, you know, updates. We had one in the spring called the Spring Creators Update. The number was 1703. 17 is the year.
Mm-hmm.
03 is the spring. This one is 1709. Which meant it was first released in the fall of 2017, and you're finally getting it, but there's something getting in the way of it.
Right.
So can you get into Windows at all? I mean, has it finished restoring you to your old version?
No. It just keeps saying that it's going to, and it just, like I said, the little Microsoft blue window comes up and says restoring your previous.
So it's in a boot loop. It's just doing it over and over again.
Right. And I can't.
This may be related to the Spectre and Meltdown. Intel put out a fix for this flaw that was in all Intel chips since 1995. And this week, Intel said, oops, don't install that fix because it causes your machine to reboot over and over and over again.
Well, that's what it's doing.
That sounds like you might be, so in this case, maybe it isn't Microsoft's fault. Once you're in that boot loop, you're in bad shape. There's not much you can do because you can't get into Windows to fix it.
No, I've tried whatever was the every key on the keyboard, all the F stops, and nothing.
Golly.
Am I going to have to take it in or in the backyard and shoot it?
I'm glad you have a Pixelbook. Chromebook. You can probably, I'm trying to think now. Did you at any point make recovery disks for your system?
Yes.
So, I mean, but there's probably data on there you want to keep, right? Let me cross my fingers. You have a backup, right?
Yes.
Okay. So at this point, really, the only thing you can do is restart the, you know, do a full Windows install and restore from your backup the data that you will be losing. So those disks, those recovery disks, it's time to use them.
Okay.
I'm sorry to say. If you had another PC or you have a friend with a PC, you can download Windows 10 from Microsoft and use that to recover. Synapse says, power it off, hold down escape. I've never tried this. I don't even know about this. And then power on, and you should get some recovery options. That's what you want.
I've done that.
And it doesn't help.
No.
Yep. Sounds like it's time to do the restore. And then you will, before you do anything else, immediately want to do, believe it or not, the Windows update that just failed. Get that done before you do anything else, and make sure it completes. And then you've got an up-to-date system, which you do really want. If it's the Intel problem, the good news is Intel and Microsoft are no longer pushing out those updates. Those were firmware updates that were causing this, and they stopped. So you won't get that again. But you really do want those updates. What a mess. And this is kind of why I say, use a Chromebook. At least that's still working. If you are able to get in the recovery options and recover it, you probably won't lose data. But if you run those recovery disks, generally that involves wiping the drive and starting over. There's only a minute left. I don't think I have time to take another call. Jim from Windsor, Colorado. He's got MoviePass. He says the app is hit and miss. And, of course, the problem with MoviePass, which is a great – I don't know how what the business model is, but you pay $100 a year or something, and you can go to movies all you want, unlimited. Although AMC says, we're not going to accept it. I don't know how they not accept it, because it's a credit card, right? There's trouble in paradise there anyway. It may be that the app is new. He's wondering if it's overwhelmed. It may also be that it's being blocked by certain theaters. Don't try to use it at AMC. Actually, next week, let's talk about this MoviePass. I want to talk to somebody who's using it and how it's working for them. It sounds crazy. How do they make any money? But now we're out of time. Don't forget the website all week long. It's there for you for free. No sign up. TechGuyLabs.com. Thanks to Michael Cozio, our musical director. He's pushing all the buttons. Kim Schaffer for answering the phones. Thanks most of all to you for joining me. And I'll see you next week, right? Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T, it stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.